Welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Natasha Moore.
And I'm Simon Smart.
Today we're speaking to Joel McCarrow, who is a Melbourne-based performance poet, as well as a writer, speaker, educator and community arts worker. He's the artist ambassador for Tear Australia and co-founder of the Centre for Poetics and Justice. He's coming to talk to us about his work. Welcome to the program, Joel.
Great to be here. Mm.
Joel, you don't meet many poets, or you probably do.
I meet a lot of poets, but you may not meet too many.
What's it like being a poet in Australia today?
It's probably actually an exciting time in some sense. The poetry world is probably changing and growing and morphing, especially the scene that I am in is very particularly the performance poetry scene. So I write, and there is actually a performance poetry scene, if you can believe that. I write my poetry to perform it. I do have stuff that is written on the page, but I would be known as a stage poet predominantly. And within that scene, within the performance poetry scene, there's this real growing movement and momentum of young people coming through that are discovering poetry as something exciting and engaging, and not just maybe what they were bored with, sadly, in high school. But even high schools and schools, I do a lot of workshops in schools, and teachers, English teachers, are beginning to realise that if they're going to get their kids into poetry, one of the main ways is going to be through performance poetry. So there's this real groundswell thing beginning to happen, which is really exciting. I want to be somebody. I want to become somebody. Leave the old behind and be born again. I want to soar again. Strap these wings to my back, turn my face to the sun and fly straight through the moon. I want to weave the words of those poets, weave words that leave mouths open and hearts arrested, speak words that drop bombs in the dams in the corner of the hardest man's eyes, and then dance wildly with him in the tears that come flowing down.
The fact that your work is mostly performance poetry, and you've performed all over the world.
Yeah.
You performed at the Individual World Poetry Slam Championships in the US in 2012. You're only the third ever Australian perform there.
Yeah.
How does that change the way that you write and the way that you think about your work, the fact that it's performance art?
Specifically, I write it to perform it. So I don't write it as a page poem, but the way that I write it, so as I'm writing it, I will actually be often going over it out loud as I'm doing it, so that I'm working out the rhythm and the flow of how I would actually speak it. And as well as doing that, working out the different dynamics of how I would perform it, and whether I'm speaking slow or fast, and loud or soft. And so I'm bringing in all the performance elements almost as I'm writing it.
I suppose in a way that's bringing back something quite traditional about the way poetry was written, that it was originally written for the ear, and we've come to think of it as a page-bound
thing. It was always an oral form of storytelling before we had the written word. It's been around, obviously, for thousands and thousands of years of cultures, tribal cultures, sharing story through poetry as an oral form. So in some ways it is a resurgence of a very old, ancient tradition. Yeah.
Now, Joel, you've said that you have a sense that we've lost what you call the sacred art of being present to the things inside us, the things around us, the deeper realities. What are these deeper realities that you're trying to point people towards?
The sacred things of life and being present. For me, within my poetry, as in, I suppose, with all of my life, one of the key things for me is all about looking to see what's there behind the surface level of things. So, and this is what creativity does so well. So I think that often we walk past the normal things in life, and because they've become so so mundane to us, we don't see the beauty that is there. And what poetry does, and before poetry I was a photographer as well, and what these art forms do, I think, is they help people see the beauty that is there that we miss every day. And they sort of call people to slow down and say, take a look again at this thing. Take a look again and recognize the maybe what I would call the fingerprints of the divine that is sitting beneath everything and showing people beauty and showing people justice. I watched the other day as she flattened button nose against misty windows.
traced raindrop stale trail lines down the glass with her fingers. Little girl, you see so much clearer than I ever could. Too often I run from playing in the rain. I do not see God in its drops as you do, little girl. Too often I run. Too often I miss God in misty windows. I do not sense the ever-present sacred. Pull back layers of the mundane. Glimpse infinity. Mind too busy. Scattered rush of too many thoughts and too many phone calls and too many responsibilities. Little girl, would you teach me of that secret story woven in and through the fabric of simplicity?
For heaven. It reminded me when you were talking there of when you go for a walk with a little tiny child.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There it's a long walk because you don't go very far fast.
Absolutely.
Because they are noticing things all the time. They are the intricate pattern in a leaf,
absolutely,
little anthill or whatever. And
yeah.
I think when you do that as an adult, you suddenly say, oh, yeah, I've forgotten why that's really cool or why that's really great. So
yeah.
I think that's sort of connecting with
how to slow down. I'm the proud father of a 14-week-old son, and so he literally is seeing everything for the first time, and I watch him as he's watching the world that I'm so used to, and to see his face and see how engaged he is, it's beautiful. It calls me to attention.
Yeah, it's this capacity for wonder that we sometimes lose.
Yeah.
Now, you have this sort of sense throughout your poetry of faith and spirituality.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering about the way Christianity and the arts relate, because it's not always been a great connection, although there are lots of good periods of this. Sometimes in particular Christian traditions, Christianity has been thought of sort of the enemy of the aesthetic.
Yeah.
The suspicion of art and the artist. Do you think that's a fair characterization?
Definitely in some traditions and in parts of larger traditions. So I was over in Rome a few months ago, probably about a year ago now, and going through the Vatican. And within the Vatican, you've got these amazing, glorious statues with all their penises chopped off and replaced with these fake maple leaves because some pope, I forget which pope it was, but felt that it was too gratuitous or whatever. And so these beautiful, amazing works of art have been destroyed in some sense, though they're still amazing. So definitely there's that sense of faith traditions and Christianity sort of backing away from, I think, the rawness of what art can be, art and creativity and poetry and painting. It can be so raw and touches into the deep both beauty and ugly things.
Right, it can be uncomfortable, can't it?
Yeah, uncomfortable.
Maybe, yeah. I'm imagining you'd be someone who'd argue for going with that sort of uncomfortability.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's, in some ways, that's the whole purpose of creativity, is to make things uncomfortable because we are so comfortable in our society, and so to challenge that. And so I do think there is a tradition within different faith traditions that is all about that sort of art as well, so that doesn't back away from it but actually enhances it and calls people to something more. Even, I mean, it's messy and it's uncomfortable. I'm even thinking of like Van Gogh and his story of wrestling and faith and it's a messy ordeal, but within it there is such beauty and life and connection with something more.
For the white part in me that flows from my ancestry, I want to say sorry to every country that was colonized, every person that was brutalized, every tribe that tasted the ash of burning flesh and could not see their reflection through the haze in their eyes. I am sorry. To every mama who never saw her child become a man, every papa who watched his daughter dragged away, every son who still wishes every day they had the courage to do more, say more, speak more, fight more, every daughter who cannot look herself in the eye for fear the ghost that stripped her bare would still cling to her flesh, no matter how many soap lathers she gathered. I am sorry.
Joel, one of your particularly powerful series of poems is titled My Confessions.
Yes.
Yeah. You kind of go through and apologize on behalf of kind of all your basic affiliations being white and male and Christian and rich, relatively rich.
Just middle class, the same as everyone here, which puts us in the top few percent of the world in terms of how much money we have. Yeah.
So you kind of go through and apologize for the suffering that all of these groups have inflicted on others. That must have been quite a difficult thing to do, quite difficult poems to write on various
They were
levels.
Really difficult. Yeah, absolutely. They actually stemmed out of, I went to a poetry night one night and there was a man up there performing this lamentful, angry poem towards his parents. He was a gay man that had been totally ostracized and kicked out of home by his parents, and that sense of abandonment was coming into his poem, and I just got me thinking about how much we have to answer for so many of the things that have happened within history. We as in me, as in white, Anglo-Saxon, middle class, Christian faith tradition. And a lot of people, when I do these poems, I sort of have two responses. One of them is people come up and thank me for being so honest and authentic. And other people come up and say, why do you need to say sorry? You don't need to say sorry. It wasn't you who was in the Crusades, or wasn't you who is bombing abortion clinics or whatever it is. And I always say to those people, absolutely, but I'm more than just me. Like, we have this real focus on individualism within our society, but I am, and the end of those four poems, that series is, I am more than just me. I am one with humanity, and so on behalf of humanity, to humanity, I do need to say I am sorry.
Social justice is important part of your work.
Absolutely.
And you're not only an artist, but you're an ambassador for TEAR Australia. Yep. As you sort of employ that real passion of yours, how you guard against your art form becoming a form of propaganda?
I think whatever message that, whatever creativity you bring to the world, whether you like it or not, it's always going to make a social statement. So I don't think there's actually any way out of propaganda in that sense. You're always going to either uphold the status quo of society and of what our society looks like, or you're going to subvert it by the artistry that I do. And so if that's the case, if I could say that, then I choose to make my art challenge and subvert society. Subversion is, if there's a version, a dominant narrative, then the poetry that I tell, I try to tell another version, another story to challenge what is immediately there in front of our faces.
When the world has come to an end, when the bread that I once ate sits stale and dry, when the wine is now gone and I cannot but sit in the midst, I remember.
Obviously, there's a strong link in your poetry between issues of social justice and the words, the poetry that you perform. How do you envisage poetry having an impact on those issues? What can it really affect in real life?
When I come to that question, I think of someone like the speeches of Martin Luther King, which essentially is poetry. The I Have a Dream speech has affected millions and millions and billions of people. And it was poetry, straight poetry. And so I absolutely think that words do have the opportunity to change and to challenge. For me, change begins with dissatisfaction. And if I can speak words that create some sort of dissatisfaction within people, then I think I'm doing what I am here for with my words. So I think of the role of the jester in medieval society was never just to entertain the king or the medieval court. The role of the jester was always to say to the king, what if anyone else said they would lose their head? And they would say that through artistry, through poetry, through song. And so my poetry is very similar in that sense. I see the poet as a modern jester, a modern day jester, who says to society those things that we don't like to hear. It gets under the skin and challenges. And I think through that means, change absolutely can happen.
When the creak in my back is only just the beginning, when no matter which way that I walk, I always find my way back here with the wall before me, the mountain above me, the forest behind me, the cliffs beside me, when there is no way to turn and no path to follow. It is then that I remember.